5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John Miglosh for the Wisconsin DMA and the International Society for Strategic Marketing. Okay, let's get right in on it today because we got a lot to talk about. Too much. My style consultant says, keep it down to one article. Oh, that would be no fun at all. So let's get over to the news. First off, Domino's resurrects the 1980s mascot, the Noid, which used to cause havoc and show you why Domino's preserved the pizzas. And so now we'll watch this little vignette about pizza delivery. Domino's apparently has the new Nuro, and it's going to be doing some self-driving pizza delivery, which is a lot safer than, you know, and taking the back streets and stuff than it is, you know, driving people around.
At Domino's, we're constantly innovating to find better ways to deliver you pizza, which is why we're testing driverless delivery powered by Nuro, and it's got someone back to their old habits.
Uh-oh, here comes the Noid. Wow,
annoyed the Noid when you get any two or more medium two-topping Domino's pizzas delivered for just $5.99 each.
So I wonder where they're testing it, because I'd like to see one of those little buggers driving around. But anyway, whatever. Progress. And like I said, it's a better place to test probably than other places. So anyway, we'll keep an eye out for that Noid. Don't let it ruin your pizza. Okay, let's see if we go back here. And I really wanted to do this from searchenginejournal.com. Top 10 worst marketing disasters of all time, but they missed the one I really wanted to do. A friend of mine got a gig with Apple, and he was doing a high-end B2B marketing their their really big graphics Macs and that whole complement of equipment. And the reason he got it was because the previous group had gone to Apple and said, not only can we do direct mail to business, which you may not have been doing, but we can check their credit rating, and we can give them like an Apple credit card for $15,000 or $20,000 credit to go buy the equipment, and we'll make sure it all works right. And so they did a first mailing, I think, of, you know, 10, 20, 30,000, I mean, a good number of design firms, graphics design and that sort of thing. And, in scoring data, sometimes a high number, it's like we were talking yesterday about subpar marketing and subpar golf are 180 degrees different. Subpar in golf is a good thing. Subpar in marketing, bad thing. Okay, well, scoring, like for example, scoring the total sales that someone spent with you, the bigger the number, the better the customer, the more they've spent. On the other hand, scoring recency is one of the three big pieces that the foundation of modeling, really, I'd say, of customer modeling, is recency, how long since they ordered, frequency, how many times have they ordered, and monetary, how much have they spent. So a high number in monetary is a good thing. We give them a 5. A high number in recency, typically in days, weeks, or months since they've ordered, is a bad thing. The longer they've gone without ordering, presumably that we've been contacting them, the worse it is. So we actually got a client, American Science and Surplus, because they put in the new Linux version of a customer ERP system and used their RFM that came standard in the box. And apparently the programmer had thought that the higher the number of days since the last purchase, the better, and given them a 5. And so when the circulation person pulled the names, they pulled all the old names. Well, a similar thing almost exactly happened. That would count as a marketing disaster. It almost put them out of business. You know, they did it 2 times. Couldn't figure out why they got no orders, and then they called us. We found the problem, fixed it, and for a while did their mailings. Nice, nice company, nice guy, Phil. Anyway, back to Apple. So whoever scored the credit rating gave the high number a low score, like you would do with recency, exactly the same. And so the good news was that the sales were tremendous, jumping off the shelves. The bad news is they had mailed only the design firms with the absolute worst credit. And so, you know, it's not gonna hurt Apple, you know, $1 trillion valuation to let a few machines slip with bad debt. They can write it off. But they were so excited at how well it worked. They said, well, let's do it this time, but we'll do it right. Well, they did it wrong again. And so they got fired, and rightly so. But it illustrates the problem of it's not just the data, and it's not even just the scoring. It's that all three pieces have to be understood together. There has to be context, and context is always more important than the data itself, because if you score it upside down, or if you pull it upside down, you're going to crash the plane. So anyway, I'll put this up on the show notes, which you can get if you subscribe to WDMA. It's free support, mail, and direct marketing, and you won't regret it. Go over to WDMA.org, and you can find the show notes and find out what the top 10 disasters they think are. Okay, performance marketing. Tara wrote this nice article, and this was in Adweek, which took Target Marketing Magazine, bought it, and renamed the section of Adweek Performance Marketing. What is performance marketing? It turns out that a survey of over 400 marketers proved that no one knows what it is. They all say, oh yes, nearly 100% of respondents said, we know what performance marketing is. I wouldn't have, because I have no idea what it is. So they gave them six statements about what performance marketing might be, and 90% got two or more incorrect answers out of six. That means they got a 67 on the test, and that is an F with a capital F, big red F. So 90% failed the test. Now, the question is that indicative of idiot marketers or of Adweek coming up with a term that they're trying to coin that no one else knows or believes in? And that's why I fight for direct mail and direct marketing, okay? And the style consultant briefly glanced at my number one video on YouTube, which is the definition, what is direct marketing? And so I'll put that up on LinkedIn, and it's available. If you just sort by most popular videos, that's one back when I was a child. Let's go see if I can cook this up. Back when I was a child, here we go, and there I am. Let's play a little bit of it.
This week my mother wrote me. She said, I watched all your videos and I still don't know how to make money with data.
That's true. She watched all my videos and didn't know how to make money with data. So anyway, maybe you'll get more out of it than my mother did. But anyway, that was back in my youth. It was only like 9 years ago, but the beard, you know, adds a few years. And I have to admit, I did dye my hair a little bit. One of my daughters, a second style consultant, sent me a package of Miss Clairol for men, but then they discontinued the product, and so I discontinued worrying about it. I told my wife, I might look bad now, but I won't get that much worse. Anyway, so if you're going to coin a term, you know, then don't be surprised no one knows what it's about. Thank you for that, Tara. Okay, now, this, I missed Mark Ritson. I've been missing him because he's one of my usual weekly things. And I wrote a DM to him. He follows me on Twitter. And I said, where have you been? Well, it turns out we found him. He was speaking at Marketing Week Mini MBA, or he was speaking at the Festival of Marketing, okay, last week, Festival of Marketing, right, June 10th. And he gave a talk on the 10 the 10 traits of a successful marketer. And I thought this was pretty good. I always like what Mark has to say, and I miss his articles because they were very thoughtful and also funny. The first is empathy, and that does not mean that you feel sorry for people, although it sounds like it does. What it means is being able to think get in the head of the customer. What does a customer think? You know, my wife's been trying to remodel our spare bedroom, and she's been trying to buy a comforter, and she bought a king size bed because it's not a big room, and got a new mattress, and it turns out that almost no comforters are sized now for king, not king. She bought a normal double bed. I mean, a bed for two people. It's not a queen. It's not a king. It's not a California king, which I didn't know about, but I now learned. And it turns out that you can't find the dimensions on most comforters. They won't give them to you on most buying online. It's just a complete disaster. And so if you own a comforter company, you might want to give the dimensions. Or a search by dimensions. You know, like eBay gives you searches by some stuff, like how many gigabytes would you like in this computer, that kind of thing. It took me 5 years to buy a refrigerator online. Nobody would give me the dimensions. Now, I try to help companies. Tell them, try to order from your own company. How's that for an idea? Just try to place an order. See if it's possible. See if you can actually manage it. I tried to buy a book on Kindle, the green book, I forget the name of it, that has an article by Ritson. It was what Fishburne referred to on Monday. I went and bought it. And then Kindle, I try to load Kindle on my main desktop here, and it says my password is not good enough. And so then I put in my email, because I've had the same email and same Amazon password. I've been an Amazon customer and affiliate since 97 or something, you know, whatever that comes to, 24 years. And then it doesn't like my password. I spent an hour and a half on the phone with Amazon. I didn't even know you could get on the phone with Amazon. At first, I dialed an 800 number that said it was Amazon, and it, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be giving them my password and login, and I could easily get myself in real trouble. Let me double check that number. It turned out it was completely not the way Amazon works. Amazon, you contact them and say, call me, and they do. And it was very helpful, but it took me an hour and a half to straighten out that mess. So try to place an order. Try to get Kindle on your computer or whatever you are if you're Jeff Bezos. Okay. Try to get in the point of view of the customer. And, you know, I also recommend secret shoppers and all that sort of thing. There's a profound lack of understanding of what people outside the marketing industry bubble need or want. You know, just the idea that they're in love with your brand. I mean, that's in my book, The I Love You Variable. Almost impossible to find. What you're really trying to figure out is who doesn't like you and not bother marketing to them because it's a waste of money. If we can figure out who isn't going to buy our car, much more helpful. They might still buy it, you know, but realize that it might be an anomaly. Curiosity. People say, why do you do this show? It's because I want to keep up on stuff. It's a lot of fun. I learn a lot. I'm insatiably curious. So I know I shouldn't be taking this. I shouldn't be grading myself on this, but you know, I got an MA in philosophy. I had never taken a marketing course in my life, and all of a sudden I was a marketing consultant. So anyway, comfort with is one of my big ones. Comfort with imprecision. Deluxe Check, which you know sells to banks. They hired me years and years ago. They hired me to come up. They had implemented a spreadsheet of mine. They'd forced all the marketing people to use the spreadsheet to estimate the ROI and then compare the results. And for some reason, the marketing margin was 10 points higher than the accounting margin. You know, like the gross margin or the revenue left over after you take out the costs on an order. Well, it turned out that the marketing people were compensated by the percentage of margin. Which is not a bad idea. It's a pretty good idea. But They took the price per unit times the number of units to get the sales, and they took the cost of goods per unit times the number of units to get the cost per unit. They left out the order processing charge for the most part. I think they put a little bit in, but they left out shipping and sales tax. Why? Well, they did it because they don't mark it up. It doesn't get marked up by Deluxe. It didn't in those days anyway. And so it actually lowered the percentage of margin and their compensation. I said, do you count sales tax revenue, or, you know, the money that comes in on an order for shipping? And they said, yeah. I said, how much is it? They said about 5% of sales. I said, you count it in your overall top line revenue? They said, revenue is revenue. The accounting guys did. I said, I bet sales tax averages about 5%. How did you know? The accounting people said, you know, you could be an accountant if you wanted to. I thought, well, that's a really scary idea. But most of the time, the customer database does not add up to the P&L exactly. Not exactly. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that much. You just want to get a ballpark. You know, and sometimes they'll try to work out like the cost per square inch on a catalog, and they'll have little rulers in there. No, just get me what takes up a lot of space and what takes up a little space. There's a lot of them. Making time, getting sucked into tactics. Yeah, look out for that. That's kind of what I do all day. It's fun. Shiny objects, you know. People say, I don't have time to do planning. It's not that I don't have time. It's that I don't know what's going to happen next. You know, marketing's vision is here. This is one for you, Mark. You can think about this. And this is part of that dichotomy between accounting and marketing, is that accounting, I used to feel bad that accounting numbers add up, but marketing numbers never quite come out right. Our projections never match reality. And it was a long, and the accountants would make fun of us. I remember when I was doing a lot of projections. Mine were plus or minus 2% most of the years, or within 6%, I think, like 80% of the time, which is really close for a year, for an annual projection. But what I didn't realize was that accounting was looking in the rearview mirror. They were just stacking up the chips after it was done, whereas marketing was trying to predict the future, trying to guess what's in the other guy's hand. That's a lot harder. That's a lot harder. And so that's probably why marketing has an aversion to planning. Because, you know, not only can accounting plan the year, but they can adjust their spending along the way after the money comes in. Whereas marketing has to spend the money first and hope something good happens with it. Think about that. That's way different. Marketers are opportunity thinkers. Accountants are procedure thinkers. And so is IT. And that's one of the big issues. You know, in this article, it starts with a picture of a brain. Okay, that's one of your issues, different brain. Now, I had a brain injury as a child, so I can understand both sides. Long-term vision. Yeah, there you go. That's a big deal, right? What's coming in the future? And very few people have a really good view of the future. If they watch my show, they might get a better one. Short-term doing. Any idiot, I love this one. Ritson said, cited PepsiCo's vice chair, CFO Hugh Johnson. Hugh said, any idiot can do short-term and any idiot can do long-term. Yeah, because that's basically not verifiable. The trick is to do both. Amen. You know, with the catalogers that, you know, I did a lot of style consulting myself. With the catalogers that were good at short-term, I would encourage them to think brand. With the catalogers that were really good at brand, I would encourage them to think tests all the time. Think about refining the offers, refining the lists, see what's going on. Okay, most marketers may have a long-term vision, but they are useless at delivering the numbers, he added. Probably something to that. It's easier to predict the future of the impact of unmeasurable occurrences. When you hold us to numbers, we don't like that. And that's why CFOs and CMOs rarely get along. Choicefulness means what don't we work on? And that's important. Making things look simple, always good. Rule breaking, yeah. We're not really brave, but we look at things differently, especially if you had a brain injury, and do things differently. Well, that's enough for today. Oh, no, this is the best one. You thought you were going to get away easy here. This was the best one that Mark had to say. Pay attention. Test stuff. He doesn't really say testing. I wish he did, but he's not a real direct marketer. But at least give yourself a feedback loop. And that's the advantage of planning. That's the advantage of making predictions. Hold your own feet to the fire. That's why accounting doesn't like you. They think you're just comfortable in airy fairy land. So if you want to be a great marketer, yeah, put a number down on the piece of paper. Say, we're going to spend this, and we're going to get this. It's that disconnect between a tangible expense and a top-line effect. We know we're spending money. What's the causal impact? You can do that in marketing, in direct marketing. You can do a holdout test. You can do it in mail. Mail is the best arena for actually measuring the connection between the ad spend and the result. I'm not saying it's the best medium. You know, if you can refine the offer, if you can make it work, if you can drive traffic to your stores with TV, you know, your cost per thousand is cheap. Get a line out the door that way. But figure out what's working. Direct marketing is best. So I'll post the link. I think I'll just post it on LinkedIn. It's already out on YouTube. Just search by the number one view and find out what direct marketing can mean to you. Have a great day. Like and share. I have to keep talking, they say, because otherwise it cuts me off. And Mark Ritson, I hope you listen, and I hope you write some more articles. I really enjoy your work. Bye-bye.